Spirituality, there's so much material to draw from. Wisdom traditions, attending services of one kind or another, or simply talking to people about their own varied experience of getting outside themselves. After completing this text, I came away thinking about how one author, Karen Armstrong, had addressed just about every aspect of spirituality I had wanted to cover. In addition, regardless of what she wrote, her prose was always as well written as any I've read. So what I thought I'd do instead of delivering a sermon is to just recommend all of her 20 books to you and then find out what's on your mind. A story. The children in a religious exploration class were drawing pictures. The teacher asked one of them, "What are you drawing a picture of?" The child responded, "Well, I'm drawing a picture of God." Surprised, the teacher remarked, "But nobody knows what God looks like." Said the UU child, "Well, they will when I'm finished." I think this is what we'll be talking about today. Spirituality is a wild and cloudy category. Few books in the spirituality section of most bookstores define it, even though each text is written as if it has been defined. Most of those are focusing on the experience of spirituality and leave the analytical part for another time. My understanding of the analytical part of spirituality is that it is a process of temporarily minimizing the practical side of our lives in order to focus on what is most essentially good. Part of the problem with spirituality could be with the word spirit, as in school spirit. Good for sports, but doesn't get you better grades, pay the bills, or solve a problem. Not serious and not productive. Spirituality can be practiced in name only or as a special aspect of living. How about us, our denomination, association, fellowship, religion, faith, or whatever we call the organized effort that goes by the name of Unitarian Universalism? Shouldn't an inspired commitment to change the world cover everything we need here? School spirit or religious spirit? Like many things that might be useful, spirituality's good side sometimes can be hard to recognize. Christian denominations have always had tension between them. Christianity and Judaism have had some disagreements. And just about every week, the international news accurately reports frightening conflict between Islamic Sunni and Shia. The root meaning of religion is to bind. That makes sense because religion may have been born out of our mortality. Maybe the inevitability of death inspired a longing for an ultimate purpose. For tens of thousands of years, people have asked each other the question, why? And then gradually, we started to dance, sing, play music, tell creation stories, and develop rituals that bring us together to consider, even embody, what is good. That's good enough for me. Within broad limits, any suggestion of how we can live better is what I want and what I need. Like so many former Catholics, I have a list of grievances, but having gone to Catholic church and schools was a help to me, a plus compared to not having done so. Our opening words were a reading of the Bible's proclamation about the quality of creation. Why would material reality have to be given a thumbs up after each stage of its creation, unless the point was to establish that it, and now we, are in some way fundamentally good. Science acknowledges that the cosmos is not random. Beyond something from nothing, at every level of development of the universe, there are patterns corresponding to widely agreed theories of physics. As far as life is concerned, some might say that we are an opportunity based on existing conditions. Would that be the theory of evolution, or Genesis, or both? What does spirituality have to do with the important practicality of our everyday lives? America produces 600 feature films a year. Television has movies available 24/7. Libraries and bookstores have walls filled with emotional novels. There's Coachella, and there's the internet. Don't we have enough opportunity for uplift without observing a Sabbath in a church, temple, or community center? It looks like we've mastered the practical just here in America. We've invented the computer chip, paperclip, potato chip, and the steel wheel. Paper bags, postcards, and post-its. The thermostat, traffic light, toaster, and teddy bear. Ballpoint pen, bottle cap, and baseball bat. The space shuttle, sewing machine, windshield wiper. Dishwasher, sprinkler, and jackhammer. Airplane, air conditioning, doorbell, and drive-thru. 747, GPS, LED, and of course, QWERTY. Guess all we really need is a good manager. Our Unitarian Universalist seven principles clearly point to humanism, democracy, and introspection. Some of our Sunday services can range from a touch of the supernatural with reference to blessings, while others contain something close to clear-cut atheism, focusing on a singular practical side of life. The religious root of the Unitarian Universalist Association is Christianity, whose roots are in Catholicism and the Stoic Mass. The Christian Pentecostal and evangelical denominations have for decades abandoned the traditional cultural approach to worship, but retain a supernatural theology. Their understanding of the mysteries of ultimate reality is rooted in a story of personal eternal salvation, which science is not welcome to judge. Their denominations have found substantial growth because they have discovered a way to celebrate the death of Jesus, not just in word, but with positive emotion. Traditional Christianity's challenge is in convincing parishioners there is joy in a somber ritual, and many churches have adjusted. Renewal is welcomed by us all in small and large ways. Setbacks and loss can send us looking for a way forward, or sometimes just a way out. The distracting 24-hour breaking news cycle aside, we are all living in a world that is radically changing without our lifting a finger, leaving many of us behind. If we choose to search for threads of vital and challenging information, we might find them hiding in plain sight. Maybe we need an enzyme, something that speeds up a process that is already taking place and brings us to a valuable new awareness more quickly than would otherwise occur. It's not uncommon for us to wait until a big problem or a big setback strikes before we finally accept something we didn't want to acknowledge. Sometimes this is the best way to learn because we would have never made the necessary changes without it. But the cost can be devastating. In recovering from such an event, would we have the sense to keep what is genuinely useful and get rid of the rest? Even without suggesting some sort of afterlife, there may be, in some sense, no limit to our time on earth. What time is it? It is now, and then now, and then now again. It is every aspect of the present that we can handle and choose to experience. That makes me happy because early on I was really concerned that I was missing something that many already seem to understand, that life is good. Maybe it was good, I thought, but I couldn't consistently see it. And time was not helping. The longer I lived, the more there seemed to be no clear indication of an answer, yes or no. Eventually there was college, marriage, two daughters, a 20-year job, and a pension, divorce, and so far, daughters who are doing well. Now I have the answer. Life can be good if we use our resources and keep trying to figure things out, no matter what. We've been here anywhere from 10,000 to a couple of 100,000 years, depending on how you look at it. We've developed very useful tools to survive, not the least of which are the signs, symbols, and sounds of language. Yet we see only about 15% of the entire spectrum of light. And in physics, the principle of uncertainty predicts a guaranteed margin of error in one of our most basic measurements of energy. Stability and change. I think that's what we're looking for. How do they come together? For many of us, a walk can clear our mind. Slow music and a comfortable chair works for me. Getting the dust to settle is not just important, but crucial for clarity and our next step. How do we clear the space that's often cluttered? How do we delete files and folders and even an unneeded program so that the disk in the computer of our mind can run better? It might start with how we're feeling or not feeling. It might start with realizing that some things we are doing are not very effective because we're running a program, an idea, that doesn't fit the situation or circumstance well. 1950 is not 1980, which is not 2018. New information is coming in as though it's being fast-forwarded. We can catch up if we make important adjustments, like using the second part of our central nervous system, our emotional system. We can begin to catch up by realizing that yielding can be just as important as asserting. Yielding to what? Or to whom? To something or someone who, in some way, is greater than ourselves, an idea, a trusted friend, or loved one. How do we do that? We don't have to lift a finger because our brain is automatically comparing and contrasting everything we do and have done up until this point and is looking for improvements and solutions for our future. It's built in. We might say we just need to get out of our own way. Sometimes yielding is enough to realize that negative emotion, not mental certainty, is decisive in our choices. Yielding can help us move toward more gratitude in appreciating that we're not only citizens of this United States, but also local residents of one of the most beautiful, progressive, and affluent regions of the earth. Yielding can help us acknowledge our racial, gender, or class privilege so that we become a better example to our children, grandchildren, or others. We become the change. The late author Erich Fromm fled Nazi Germany. With no supernatural belief, his scholarship went so far as to suggest a reinterpretation of the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament. Fromm wrote that because the Israelites had suffered and that their God had witnessed their suffering, he would make it possible for them to find a way out of Egypt. In reference to the Hebrew Bible, Dr. Fromm stated that, quote, "stable historical change and revolution seem like a contradiction. The enslaved person has no concept of freedom, yet cannot become free unless they have a concept of freedom." The biblical story gives an answer to this paradox. The beginning of liberation lies in the human capacity to suffer physical or spiritual oppression. The suffering moves us to act against and end our oppression, but that we can't yet seek a freedom of which we know little. If we lose that ability to suffer, we lose the capacity to change. In the first step of a revolution, we need to develop new powers, which we didn't up until then possess, but going forward can become freer. And in that process, it is always possible to fall back into the old patterns of slavery and self-destruction. Unquote. Maybe we could explore one of Unitarian Universalism's six sources that our congregations affirm and promote. The direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder, affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. Thank you.